We're glad to see you here, and we want you to know how much we thank you for your interest in missions and for being a part of extending the kingdom of God. I was reading the other day something that I thought was, well, it caught my attention. It said something to this effect: we may live out our mission interests in different ways. When our lives are aimed at Christ's global purpose, you pursue his purpose as the focal point of your entire life, and you may express it in four different ways. Some enjoy welcoming international visitors into their homes and communities. Some may express their mission interest and life focus by recognizing in others God's call and gifting for global ministries. And you are the ones who are going to be faithfully nurturing these people and preparing them, helping them to prepare for their service. Another area, some are faithful supporting those who give their lives to serve in cross-cultural ministry. And some are obedient in giving themselves into full-time cross-cultural ministry. The thought that went along with that was that some are obedient in going into cross-cultural service, but you may major in one of these four areas, but you'll probably become involved in all of them at some time. So you need to think about that. Today, we are really blessed to have several people speak to us and share with us about their ministries or give us an update on the ministries that we are all involved and a part of. Our first speaker will be Colin Saxton, who is from Friends United Meeting. I'm trying to see where he is. Oh, yes. Colin, if you want to come on up, he is the General Secretary for Friends United Meeting, and we welcome you.
Hello, friends. It's great to be here again. Thank you so much for the chance to share in your yearly meetings work. I count it a privilege to serve as General Secretary of FUM. My past, I was a pastor for about 17 years, and I was General Superintendent of my own yearly meeting for about 8 years. And so the thing that I care about most deeply is what happens on the ground for local churches, and how does that affect yearly meetings. I'll be honest, I've told the board this several times, I have no interest really in being a church bureaucrat and running an organization. I'm a hands-on sort of person, and so if I can't see how this umbrella organization is making a difference in the lives of real people, I don't think I have much interest. But thankfully, I see it happening here in FUM. I have too many slides today, so I won't try to do them all. I do want to take just a minute and thank Ron for his really great service. Serving as a board member of FUM. Ron has been a good friend for a long time. Ron, as a board member, brings a strong concern for the fiscal integrity of FUM. He works really hard to make sure that FUM stays committed to its Christ-centered focus. He's been really helpful in also making sure that we stretch our ministry and think about new areas. Of course, it's Ron, though, and you don't always see eye to eye with Ron, do you? So that's why I'm really glad that we have somebody new who I will see eye to eye with just about everything, I'm sure. I encouraged you on... wow, that was just worth it right there, wasn't it? I should just stop now. Amen. Thank you, Lord. I encouraged you to pick up one of these booklets that talk about FUM's ministry. It lists all the projects, programs, and priorities of FUM, and those are really important and sort of overwhelming what we are able to do as a community of Quakers. But the thing, oops, wrong way. I just love that picture. I want to go back to it over and over again. I know that's not it either. There we go. As I said, though, a couple days ago, the thing that draws me to FUM is the notion that we're a people. We are a beloved fellowship. We're 34 yearly meetings and associations spread around the world. We are thousands of friends, churches, and hundreds of thousands of people. And I really believe that as we think about mission isn't something that you just do. It's not just a thing that you go and do. Mission is what we are called to. We are called to mission. That is our life as followers of Jesus Christ. And part of that mission is to incarnate his life in the world and to be the body of Christ. That is the ongoing physical presence of Christ on earth. I'm absolutely committed to that. As hard as that is, you know how hard it is on a local church level to be the body of Christ. You come together as your yearly meeting, how many ever churches there are in Iowa yearly meeting, and you're stretched that way too, even harder. Well, imagine bringing together the 34 yearly meetings and trying to be the body of Christ together. It's tough. But I just think it's absolutely essential in our world, where the world is watching and saying, you Christians talk about Jesus. You talk about loving one another. Let's see it. And so FUM, in some ways, is, just as your local church is a laboratory to have to figure out how to follow Christ in that sort of way. Well, we do this through, as I've tried to synthesize FUM's ministry for this triennium, for these 3 years, is if we were to whittle it down to its core, what is our work? And at the triennial last summer, I said, I think of FUM in 3 ways, energize, equip, and connect. Our job is to energize friends and gatherings of friends to be spiritually alive, to really know Christ in the deepest possible way, to be conformed to the image of Christ in who we are and what we do. We need to be equipped as well. Too often, as Quakers, I think we send people out in the world and our training is good luck. We hope it goes well for you, instead of really taking time to train our leaders to lead effectively in a variety of ways. And then the last thing I think we do as a global community is to connect one another, to get us out of our little myopic selves that we sometimes get into as we insulate ourselves as friends sometimes and have to rub shoulders with other people and to see how Christ is being embodied in their context. And as I said again a couple days ago, the church in the global south is alive with a vitality that we don't see in our culture here. And so FUM creates this container to help make sure that we North Americans are seeing what God is doing in other places. So let me talk just for a minute about a couple of ways that we energize. One is certainly through evangelism. We are absolutely committed to evangelism in a very holistic sense. I think of evangelism as not only proclaiming the good news, it's demonstrating the good news. It's living it out in the lives of people through who we are, through embodying the teachings of the gospel in a variety of ways. We do that in places like Turkana. Where any of you been to Turkana? That's amazing. That's great. I love the fact that Iowa Yearly Meeting has been so deeply connected to the work of FUM in very practical ways. We've got about 27 staff people in the mission in Turkana that's doing church planning and evangelism. There's teaching. There's about 16 churches in Turkana right now, with more each year. There are huge issues in Turkana, as you might imagine, too. One of the main focuses of the work there is education. 82% of the people in the Turkana area have really no education at all. Only 3% have actually had a high school level education. And so there's some real opportunities as this pastoralist communities, nomads and wanderers, are starting to settle into communities. And as they try to find water, which is very difficult there, and then begin to educate their children so that they have a bit of a future. As you can see, people worship in a variety of places there. That one in the top left, I've worshiped there in that church. It was a wonderful reminder that the church is not the building, it's the people. And John, you've been there as well? Yeah, it's all three of them. It's an amazing place, and it was deeply spiritually encouraging to be there. The Turkana people are some of the most resourceful folks I've ever come across. They seem like they have absolutely nothing, and yet they have this mission, this missional heart, this creativity, this initiative and innovation to say, we've experienced this good news and we want to go share it with others. And so they've been reaching out to the to a particular group of people in Sudan. They've also been connected to the refugees who've come into Kakuma. And the amazing thing about that is, as refugees begin to go home, suddenly you have fertile ground for church planting and education and a whole new outreach. And so as we think about the spread of the Friends Church in East Africa, Turkana is playing a very vital role in that, as we will begin to see, I think, the possibility of new churches and even yearly meetings in other places. Samburu is also one of our missions, and Sammy Latole, who was here last year, sends his greetings to you and thanks you for your support. We're very involved in the work there, and they've been doing some great work in terms of church planting also. Sammy's been doing some really important work in peace and reconciliation, trying to bring tribes together who have been at war with one another for a long time. And so we continue to be super excited about the work in Samburu. One of the other energizing pieces that we do is support for isolated groups of friends. That's the Friends Meeting House in Ramallah. Anybody been to Ramallah here? Great. I could just start naming countries and see where you've been. But we're concerned about the meeting in Ramallah. The number of Christians in Palestine is diminishing at a incredibly fast rate. And the Quaker presence in Ramallah is strong because of the school, which I'll talk about in just a second. But the meeting itself is diminishing. It's down to really about 5 Palestinian people and a variety of international folks who come on any given Sunday. So we're actually in a partnership with my home yearly meeting, Northwest, who've been sending people over there to be a presence. It's a ministry of presence by just folks who are involved in the community. And so there's a woman who's committed to 3 years over there. They're sending short-term volunteers over there for 3 to 9 months. My son, my youngest, just spent 9 months there this last year. And we're trying to see how we can encourage, vitalize the ministry of the church. And we're going to be sending out some information and opportunities for FUM people to be involved in that as well. We're also trying to encourage other groups who are interested in being part of this global fellowship. Tanzania last triennial, Tanzania Yearly Meeting joined us. You've been involved as Iowa Yearly Meeting with another group in southern Tanzania that we're very excited about as well, and I think you might hear a report about that. We've been contacted by other people, a group in India that would like to be a part of FUM, and Finland, and Poland, and groups in South America who are disconnected from other friends' groups and have looked at FUM and said, we think you embody the best qualities of being Christ-centered Quakers, and we'd like to be a part of this fellowship. So we're trying to think about what's the best way forward with that. Does it make sense? Are we really the best group? Can we really support them in a way that makes good sense? And so the board and I have been wrestling with that. We provide energizing work through real practical things. One of them is, for instance, water and clean water and sanitation. We do this in a variety of ways, but one of the things that, a story I'll tell you, I was just in Africa in January and February and was in Kisumu, where Judy Ngoya, who is our staff person at the African Ministries office, is also the co-pastor of a local church. And Judy's church sits right on the edge of a slum. And they've taken the water projects, the biosand filters that we are promoting, and they've created a small group of people within the church, young adults, who are building these biosand filters because unemployment in some parts of Kenya is as high as 50%. And so they're building these biosand water filters. They have other people who are marketing them. They're selling them in their community. And then the other thing that this church is doing is providing clean water, living water, to the people of this slum for free. They can come and be a part of the church. They're reaching out to the community. They're trying to address the specific needs of the people in their communities, which I think is an evangelistic lesson for those of us in North America. Because we still have this philosophy that if we open the doors of the meeting house, folks will come. But friends, it ain't that way anymore. We've got to, as I think Todd said to us last night, God has moved into the neighborhood, and it's time for the church to move into the neighborhood and be there and connect with people around their real needs and embody Christ in some amazing ways that connect with them, where they see that God is alive within us. That's happening in Kisumu through simple things like these biosand filters. This is a church that's doing something similar in Nairobi. They're a church of about 600. I'm standing there at the top of the sanctuary, or the top of the sanctuary that they're building that will seat 2,000 people. The amazing thing about this friend's church is they're paying for this all on their own. They didn't ask for North American dollars. They said, we don't need it. We have the capacity to do this. We want to use this church as a site for ministry. I'm not a big church building fan. I don't particularly care about the size or how a meeting house looks. I want to know if it's being used. And this one is going to be used. And it's pretty exciting to think about a friend's church of 2,000. Ron's agreed to use the money he's given in his retirement to take all of you over there next year for Iowa Yearly Meeting, and so because he thought it would fit you. So thanks, Ron, for that. We really, really appreciate that. I'm going to have to bust through some of these. As I said also, I'm really concerned about the spiritual vitality of the church in North America. And so we started an initiative this year that we're calling Stoking the Fire, and we had our first event in Cincinnati, and it was very interesting. It was bringing together the most diverse group of Quakers that we can find in North America, and to try to hold up Jesus. And thank you for that. And you know, the amazing thing is that Jesus showed up, and it was pretty powerful. And I've not been to a retreat in a long time where I've come away so spiritually exhausted, because I saw people healed there. I saw barriers fall down between people. I saw somebody slain in the spirit. I saw prophetic words spoken there. It wasn't perfect. It was challenging. It was hard. It's the work of the church. And it's the kind of work that FUM needs to be involved in. And so we see this as an ongoing movement that we're going to continue over the next several years. We do equipping work, and you all know about the Belize Friends School, which is a powerful ministry that many of you are involved with. These are some of our staff people. One of our commitments at FUM is to raise up indigenous leadership. We shouldn't just always be sending North Americans who are experts to do the job that other people can do. And so we're really pleased about the transition to indigenous leaders in Belize, in Miscandi and Darcel. We're going to be starting this fall an outreach for adults as well, because there's such an educational need there. And Dale Graves sends his greetings to you as well. Dale's doing great work, and he's been involved with a discernment team that you might recognize a couple of those fine people, and Tom Palmer's there too. And I saw that over there. This group's been really, really helpful for us, because we believe that God's called us to do a lot more than run a school in Belize. And we're looking at church planting opportunities and other things. And so I'm super excited about what's going on in Belize. Ramallah Friends School is also an important ministry that we do. 1,200 kids every year in Ramallah. Muslim and Christian kids coming together in a school that's been there for over 150 years. Who are exposed to not only Christian values, but Friends values as well. In one of the most dangerous and most conflicted place on earth, people are learning how to get along with each other, and it's a pretty powerful ministry. And that's Joyce. She's our director. Before I go to that, I do want to say one thing about our field staff. In July of this year, FUM zeroed out all of the field staff deficits that we've been carrying for well over a decade, maybe longer than that. When I came to FUM, we were about $150,000 in debt in all of our field staff accounts. Every field staff was in deficit mode. Under my great leadership, that deficit climbed to about $250,000 over the course of the next 2 years. But we were working on a plan to get us out of that debt, and we've done that. And that's through the really great stewardship of the board. It's through some innovations that we've put in place in terms of how we support our staff. And it's come through the generous giving of people like you, and we really, really appreciate that. And we're committed to making sure that in the future, FUM won't not send out field staff who are not fully supported, because that's an integrity issue for us. And so thank you for making all that possible. FTC is a place, as I said, where it is one of our most important ministries, where we have the opportunity to really shape and develop the face of Quakerism in the place where there are the most people. 2,000 Friends churches in Kenya alone, about 1,500 Quaker schools that need chaplains, 20 yearly meetings that need leadership training. And so investing in FTC and the work that Robert is doing there is really, really important. And it was so great to talk to Jim Huxema this week about the possibility of putting solar energy there that would allow for reliable electricity and the ability for students to use their computers, actually use them, not just have them. And so we're excited to see how that plan develops. Let me just talk a couple things really quickly. Again, for us, the focus on North America remains really strong, and we've been doing a variety of workshops throughout North America over the last 3 years. One that I'm very excited about that I'm working with a small group of people on is something we're tentatively calling Flourishing Friends Project, which is recognizing that lots of our local churches are struggling in many ways. They're ripped apart by conflict. They don't have a clear sense of who they are and what they're called to do. They don't have any ideas about outreach. And so we're trying to pull some people together who are actually doing that work and getting them together to see how FUM might collaborate with yearly meetings to help some of our small struggling churches in North America. That's Judy. She's terrific. That's John there on the left. He's terrific. They're doing some really great work in terms of leadership training. We are involved in education program through the Peace Curriculum and also encouraging leadership in those Quaker schools. One of the nice developments that's going on there is that the Kenyan Quakers have said, we need to pay for this project. The funding for this needs to come from us. And so they're working right now on trying to raise the money to replace Zadok Malese, who is our staff person there, and to make sure that we have money in place for the peace curriculum moving forward. I'm leaving for Kenya on Wednesday and will be there for a month, and most of the work is going to be around fundraising because, again, the Kenyans are saying, we need to be doing this. So Seeds Project you know about. I won't take the time to talk about it. This is the general board as it meets in Africa. The first time I went to Kenya and I met with the general board, I said, before I gave my general secretary report, I want to recognize some important people. I said, would all of you who are leaders among FUM please stand up? And nobody stood up. And I thought, uh-oh, we have a problem here. And so I said, you're the board. I work for you. You're helping to direct this global organization into the future. And so over the last 3 years, there's been this wonderful evolution of the general board where they're highly involved and highly interested in what's going on, and they're operating as you would hope and expect that a board would. And so we really feel like we are moving from a place of being this North American mission sending agency to being a global partnership of mutuals and equals, and really involving Kenyans. I mean, the Kenyans are involved in the most meaningful way. You can read about Living Letters, because I'm running out of time. It's basically our new initiative to say how we do short-term mission matters. Because a lot of the times we do these short-term trips and they actually do more harm than good. So we're trying to rethink kind of the theology and practice around that. Communication is really important. In fact, we're hiring a new communication director to help us rethink how we do communication in terms of print, digital, and video work over the next couple of years. Hopefully you're getting our connections on a monthly basis. If you want more information about it or sign up for it, contact Kim. Quaker Life, you can also get his digital form and also in print copy. I'll skip that. That's really important work, though. There's a little bit about the peace building that we're trying to do through the Quaker schools, and we're so grateful for Charlotte Stanglin and all of her work with that. John Mohanji is very involved with conflict mediation among yearly meetings. And it's so interesting to me that the Africans are open to having somebody come in and help them. We North Americans, not so much sometimes. And that's a little bit curious to me. But I won't comment on that now that I have commented on that. One of the other things I'll say is that FUM provides an opportunity to connect through giving. So my question is, what do a second grader, a retired couple on fixed income, and a Palestinian millionaire all have in common? And the answer is they all found a really heart connection with FUM through their giving. That little boy there for the last couple of years has done this lemonade stand to raise money for children in Kenya. He was involved in the Summer Mission Project once, and he was so interested in it, he decided that every year he was going to do a lemonade stand. He just finished it like last week, and he raised about $600. He's just a wonderful little boy. There's a couple in another yearly meeting who called me one time and said, we live on a fixed income. We've been given to FUM for a long time, $10 a month, and said, we just realized that we could cut one of our bills, and so we have 10 extra dollars a month. Is there any way you could use it? And I wept when I had that phone call with them, because, I mean, they were giving sacrificially to support a project that they cared deeply about, because they felt called to it. And then we have this Palestinian millionaire who's given us $2 million to support the work in Ramallah, because he had a deep spiritual connection at the school. It prepared him to go out into the world and be very successful. And so all of these people and others like you who are finding important ways to connect with other people and projects around the world through FUM. The last thing I'll say is we launched a campaign this year. FUM has not done a campaign in a long time. And been working with the board, and we did a feasibility study and agreed now is the time, because we really want FUM to be sustainable for the future. And so last year we launched this $3 million three-year campaign, and that's been the focus of my work. We've reached about $1 million. We reached $1 million in pledges and gifts in the last year. I think we're going to easily meet that goal. Many of you, all of you, will actually be invited to participate in that campaign, and I hope you'll think about it, because before I leave FUM, whenever that is, I want to make sure that we're on a good financial footing and able to do all the things that God has called us to do. So thank you for helping us do that, and thank you for the time. So.
Okay, next we're going to have a short video that the Martins sent from Cambodia, Brianna and Nathan Martin.
Given a car, been forgiven, risen, we living and give them our all. Rise up from your past, it's holding you down. This moment is all that matters, the future is now. How will the people know if we don't tell them? If we fail them, they stumbling in the dark, but the light is what we carry, yeah. Don't have to wonder your purpose or what you here for. Reflect his image and show the world what he cares for. And I know it's all right, 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 you know, and you know. It's your lie, 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 and we know the time's running out. Can't wait around, cause seen plenty of hatred, death, and destruction where ignorance kills many. The blind leading the blind, we turning the blind eye. That alone is a crime, we got the power of life. I know that we make mistakes, don't let them keep you away. Mercy, love, and His grace is the reason we move ahead. Speak out, though we never been qualified to do it. I ain't earning, I was loved into it, I'm brand new, yeah. And I know it's all right, 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 you know, and you know. It's your lie, 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 and we know the time's running out. Can't wait around, cause
Okay, we're going to jump from Cambodia to our own state capital, Des Moines. So thank the Missions Committee for letting Church Extension put in our mission church in Des Moines. And you've heard from Jacob a little bit, but I kind of twisted Abby's arm to come up here. She doesn't have to say anything, but wanted you to make the connection so you'd know who you're praying for. Jacob did graduate from Berkeley, and since he was down in Mid-America, we utilized Randy Littlefield, who's on the Mid-America staff, and he did some church planning assessment, and we'd already hired him. We're kind of doing things backwards. We're trying to figure out this church planning business. But the people who assessed him said he's got the skills, and if we support him as a yearly meeting, we hope things can change around in Des Moines. So, Jacob?
Well, thank you for allowing me to be the guinea pig. Yeah, let me turn this thing up a little bit. There we go. So, to be frank, I don't know what I'm doing in Des Moines. I'm new to the whole thing, and I don't think that's such a bad thing. It's been a lot of conversing with pastors who I consider mentors, and a lot of taking experience from people who have done it and kind of making sense of what they're telling me and trying to go with it and trying to listen to what God's telling me to do. And so I don't have too much to say because there hasn't been much. We kind of got to take some steps back before we can start moving forward. The church in Des Moines is kind of in a dire place, and what we're kind of hoping to do is, my personal vision, what I'd like to do is focus on the young adults in Des Moines. The reason for that is I got a bunch of statistics right here that I want to read to you about Des Moines. It's the one of the top 10 cities for creatives. Waukee, which is one of the areas in Des Moines, is a top 10 best town for families. Number 4 for starting a tech career. Clive, which is another town like Waukee, top 100 best small towns to live in. And then back to Des Moines, number 4. It's number 4 for most business friendly. Number 11 for underrated city to move to. Number 6, it's the mid-sized metro to move to for college grads. And it's also the 11th best place to start a business. It's also the top 5 emerging startup city, and it is one of the 50 best places to live in America, and it is the number 2 best city for jobs. So, as you can see, Des Moines is rapidly growing with young adults. And as kind of a underlining theme of what this year's Iowa Yearly Meeting, what we've been talking about, is trying to get, how do we get young adults involved in the church? Because we're seeing a lack of it. Well, I've had the pleasure of talking with some kids who grew up in the Friends Church out of Grinnell, one of them being Todd Follett's son, and he lives in Des Moines right now, and I was just kind of asking him, what is the young culture like in Des Moines? You know, what are the kids going to? And he said, really, it's not a problem to get them go to a church. He said, right there where they live, there's kids that, I say kids, I'm talking about people my age, but they walk, and it's a small little gathering that they are in a warehouse, and there's 50 to 200 of them that go there, and they don't even have a church set up. It's all portable. They bring in the lights and everything and have a couple of bands, and so there's a need for more churches like that to happen in Des Moines. And so that's kind of where my vision is. What I'd like to do is plant a traditional ran French church in Des Moines. And the way that I envision doing that is trying to get kids that are recently living in Des Moines that grew up in the French church, that knows how the French church works, try to gather them, start it as a small group Bible study, and launch in to a traditional French church setting where we have committees and stuff like that going on. That may take, 2-5 years down the road. But right there, you got young adults that are the church, that are leading a church in Des Moines. They're the front of it. And so that's kind of my vision of, you know, what better way to reach the young adults in Des Moines than create a church full of young adults that are leaders in the community. So I need prayers. I need advice. I'm taking all I can get. just kind of a background on me is I'm a youth ministry major who, during the course of my youth ministry studies, was reaffirmed by pastors and elders at my church that maybe my calling was actually pastoral leadership and not youth ministry, and that I missed it. And then when I went to Burundi, Africa last year, I saw what the churches there in EFM were doing. I almost called it FUM. They're not FUM. I'm in a different place now. But I saw these pastors that were willing to walk, you know, 30 miles a day before Sunday so they could stay the night in the village, preach, and then walk back to their village. And I'm going, why in the world can these people plant churches like this and we can't? And they're putting way more effort into it. And so it just kind of gave me a heart for planting churches in America and a heart for the friends, because I don't know what FUM has been like, but, you know, I'm a Mid-American guy. I grew up in Mid-America Yearly Meeting, and the way I've seen EFM, there's been a lack of church planting like we used to. Someone made the comment to me that there's churches out east that their church plants that they started are celebrating their 100-year anniversary, when our churches in Mid-America haven't planted churches from their own churches, and they're celebrating their 100-year. And I'm going, why we've not started anything? Why are churches not producing churches? So that's kind of where my heart's been at. And, you know, I'm not an expert in church planting, but I do know that this is what God's called me to do, and that he's going to lead me and guide me through the process. And it's going to be learning. It's going to be hard times. There's going to be good times. I spoke this morning, and I had a couple of people ask me and Abby, like, well, are you guys doing okay? Yeah, we're doing okay. I'm just being honest about the struggles of ministry and the things that go on. You know, I think if you're called to something that God has told you to do, and you're in a place where you're going, well, I'm feeling completely comfortable and I'm not scared, you're fooling yourself. You know, there are times where you're going to be like, God, why'd you call me to do this? You know, you're going to be angry with him. You know, I look at Psalms and David, and I look at Jeremiah. One of my favorite interactions with Jeremiah is in Jeremiah 20, and it's like 1 through 12, where he's angry at God. He says, God, you deceived me. You told me that you were going to do all these great things, that people were going to listen, they were going to follow, and now they're mocking me, and they're spitting at me. And then he turns right around and he says, but your word's like a fire in my bones, and I have to let it out. I can't contain it. So that's just really spoken to me, just in the aspect of sometimes what God calls you to do, you may have no idea how to do it from the get-go, but he's going to lead you through it, and there's going to be hard times, but the reward's great. And it may be hard, but you can't hold it in. So that's my report for the Vision of Des Moines.
Thank you for sharing that. We're going to ask Mac and Bernie if they will come forward and share with us about their Meskwaki vision and ministry.
How are you all doing this afternoon? You had lunch? Good lunch?
Yeah.
It's been about an hour or so. And that's not the information that's coming at us. It's just what happens. We get filled up and we sit down in a nice warm room. Okay, so what I want to do, and I've got a little bit of experience this summer. Bernie and I co-directed the middle school, high school camp. And every day we began the day with the Daily Seven, which is like military exercises. So my knee's been bothering me. We're not going to do that, because following camp, we went and we co-directed Vacation Bible School. So I want everybody to get up on your feet. We're going to play a little Simon Says. Okay, everybody shake it out. Shake it out. Get stretched. Simon didn't say shake it out. Put your arms down. Simon didn't say put your arms down. Simon says put your arms in the air. Simon says put your hands on your shoulder. Simon says put your hands on your knees.
John.
Okay, get your hands back up in the air. Simon didn't say. Okay, that's enough. Now you know, have your seat. Well, we got the blood going. Maybe you got your wake. You can enjoy what we have to share with you, our vision at Meskwaki. We're going to start off with a video that Charlotte Stanley put together for us. So,
you We're here. Yeah. My husband just said that I'm the one that's going to start talking. And all I want to do is start crying. It's been a long, long road. I'll get it out eventually. It's been a long road for all y'all watching this adventure. It's been a long road for Mac and I. See, because 4 years ago, our hearts got attached to this place. We fell in love with those beautiful children. We fell in love with that mission. I was one of those beautiful children, not on that ground, but right outside, living right next. It's been a long road. God has been amazing. If you could see the weaving that he's been doing in our life to get us to this point. He took a crazy PK, the pastor's kid. And this little girl from LeGrand. And he took us on a life journey so we could understand and we could feel the pain and we can jump in the coffin and we can cry and we can hug and we can celebrate what's going to be happening at Meskwaki Friends with the people there. I got asked a question. But you're not a native. And it wasn't a mean question. It was a question. How can you offer? What can you offer? And I said, I can offer the love of Jesus Christ that's been offered to me. And that's all I can offer. That's it. That's all I got. That's what I've been taught. So we're going to go there and just love and be and set and pray and open our hearts and bleed out for them. That's what we can do. We can offer hospitality. That's one of our gifts. We love to be hospitable. We love to hug. So our ministry is going to be a ministry of love, taught to us by two very loving people. I was asked by a gentleman from Barclay who just happened to call the parsonage one day and found out who we were and who we belonged to. And they said, "You're Lloyd and Martha's children?" And I said, "Yeah." If you can offer the love of ministry that they offered, you're going to be great. That's all you need. We're going to do that. So you've seen our past. You see on the video what's coming now. You saw some bullet points, and so we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about more of that tomorrow. Mac's going to hit some issues now, right? Okay. Thank you all. Thank you all for, what did Danny say? Enthusiastically approving our position.
Bernie mentioned that this journey of ours started 4 years ago when we applied for directors, co-directors of Meskwaki, when Victor White was retiring. We weren't selected for that for many different reasons, and we were heartbroken. In fact, we were hurt. Christ took us to Pleasant Plain, Iowa. to teach us how to be loved, teach us how to love. It was 2.5 years of pastoral care experience from a very loving congregation. We owe so much to them. I would ask you to pray for the replacement pastor. But that was 4 years ago. This past January, I got a call from Dan Cruikshank, who's the clerk of the board at Meskwonkie. And he says, you applied here 4 years ago. We're having some difficulties. Would you be interested in coming back? And I said, absolutely not. A week later, in conversation with another pastor, he said, there's a church that's getting real serious about looking for a new pastor and have assembled a search committee. I think you would be good. Have you ever considered this particular church? I said, no, no way. Absolutely not. I'm happy where I'm at. It was a couple weeks later, I was contacted by another pastor who was going to submit his resignation. And he says, and we've been praying about it, and you and Bernie's names have come to our hearts. He says, so would you consider it? Absolutely not. No. What I discovered was God was speaking to us through other people. I can be a little stubborn, and God knows that, and so he sent three people to let me know it's time for us to move on. I just didn't know where. Right now, today, I've got 9 more hours of being the pastor at Pleasant Plain Friends Church. Tomorrow we begin. An exciting journey at Meskwonkie Friends. I would like to stand here today and tell you all the new and exciting things that are happening at Meskwonkie. But right now there aren't any. Tim Hadley said, Iowa Yearly Meeting's not dead. Our churches aren't dead. I'm afraid to tell you that the mission at Meskwonkie Friends died last January. We as a yearly meeting have gone through a mourning process since January. I invite you to celebrate with us tomorrow, and specifically August 15th. Mark your calendars for August 15th. Saturday evening, 5 o'clock, we invite the entire yearly meeting to our rebirth service. We're going to continue to have worship services on Saturday nights for a couple different reasons. But for you, the important reason is that makes us available on Sundays to travel and share the message and the excitement of the mission at Meskwonkie Friends. That mission has died. We have mourned. And now we're ready for a rebirth. And we want to move forward. God bless you all, and we'll share more tomorrow. Thank you.
It's exciting to hear the things that are happening. We have some other people who are preparing for service, and we're inviting Robert Radcliffe to come up and share with us their journey, his and Sarah's journey in preparing to go to Cambodia.
Jumripsu, can you try it? Jumripsu, Jumripsu, Soksabai. Hakun Breong. Look at that. You guys speak as much Khmer as I do. No, that was, hello, how are you? God bless you. We are so thankful for you guys' continued support of us as we prepare to go to Cambodia. We're living in Long Beach, and I can remember standing up here at this exact spot last year as I shared with you guys, we're moving to Long Beach next month. And we did. It's had lots of ups and downs, and it's been trying at times, but we've always felt that God was faithful. Jehovah Jireh, I wrote in our first letter back to you guys. Jehovah Jireh, God provides. and he's provided for us every step of the way. He's providing for us now, and we trust he will provide for us and this mission all the way through until its completion, until he calls us home upwards. And that's how long we think we'll be in Cambodia. We're not doing this for a short time, but until God calls us home. And we can't do it without you. We absolutely need your prayers. We need you to continue to pray for us just as you have been doing. We need your letters. We need your Facebook messages, your phone calls. Those encourage us so much. I have been so blessed to be with you this week, to hear you guys ask about how the preparation has been going, to hear you ask, where is Sarah? It just lets me know that you guys really do care. It is so wonderful to be back here. And at the same time, I so dearly miss our new Khmer friends in California. In preparing to go, we have tried to learn the language as best we can. We meet with a Khmer lady, first generation, who survived through the Khmer Rouge and became a Christian in the Thailand refugee camps. Became a Christian there, came to Long Beach and has lived there since 1982, raised 5 kids there on her own. And she's agreed to meet with us every week to teach us language so that I can say Jumboriap Sua and sound Khmer. You guys sounded very American. On top of the language, we've been learning the culture as best we can. I know to do this, which only a couple of you guys did back to me. We've been learning language, we've been learning culture. We've been asking the questions of former missionaries, what would you have liked to know before you went to Cambodia? And we've been trying to do that. And if I may share a story from when we were in Cambodia in October. We were in this Cham village, and we got invited into the leader of this Cham's village house, and his granddaughter is sick, and his granddaughter's this 10-day-old baby, just this itty-bitty thing. And as I'm holding her in my arms, she starts to cough. And it's the weakest, littlest cough I've ever heard. And it's the kind of cough that just broke my heart. And he pointed to her and he said something in Cham. And I don't know what he's saying to me. And he says it again and he's pointing and I don't know what to do. And our interpreter, she's there, she's sick. She's sick and they don't know what to do. They took her to a doctor. They took this little 10-day-old baby to a doctor, and the doctor put her on 3 different medicines. A 10-day-old baby, 3 different medicines, all with the same active ingredient. I don't know if you guys are nurses or doctors in here, but my wife, the nurse, gasped, was appalled. And that's what we're walking into. We prayed with this family, prayed over this baby, and advised the parents, the grandparents, that don't give any more medicine. He doesn't need the medicine. He just needs milk. Just keep feeding it. It'll be fine. And we don't know what happened with that baby. But that's the state of affairs in Cambodia. This is a third world country that we're walking into. And Sarah's nursing is playing a huge role already into that. If we could teach people to boil their water before they drink it, don't go to the bathroom upriver of where you get your drinking water, and to wash your hands before you eat, we could take care of 75% of all diseases in Cambodia. So that's what we're walking into. That's where Sarah's nursing is going to help. And I would pray, I would ask you guys to pray with us that God would open those doors when we go to Cambodia in about 7-8 months, that God would open those doors so that his people could be made well, and then his people can hear the gospel and believe on Jesus, who's their Savior and healer. That's why we're going to Cambodia. Would you pray with me? Heavenly Father, I thank you so much for these people in Iowa Yearly Meeting that have been so supportive of Sarah and I, seeing us raised up into people ready and willing to go to Cambodia. We thank you for this mission that you've placed in front of us and are calling us into. And I thank you for their continued prayers and their continued support of your mission to see your glory and your kingdom grown here on this earth, on Iowa, in Cambodia, and all around the world. I thank you. Hakun Boreong. Amen. Thank you.
Is this still hot? Good. I think it was in May of 2013, Church Multiplication Conference being held out at Berklee College, and several of us went out. And while there, I met a gentleman, wheelchair-bound, and I've been to Africa enough. I'm very shy, naturally. So I walked up to him and began a relationship. We have with us today, he drove over this morning from Omaha, is Lazarus John. He is a pastor of a Sudanese church being planted in Omaha under a Mid-America Yearly Meeting. Where are the people that met with him in Earlham? Okay. Make yourselves known here. I would like to... And I was with Lazarus less than 2 months ago out in Colorado Springs, and it occurred to me then, and since then, there's been a gathering held in Earlham. Kathy, Karen, and Deb Moyer met with Randy Littlefield and Lazarus to talk about what if we was to invite some help and try to reach out and plant something in Des Moines with the Sudanese refugees. So we've invited him to come over and talk to us a little bit. In fact, I don't know if anybody's told you, we're talking about doing something else after this. So I like to surprise him. Lazarus, could you tell us a little bit about who you are? And I've invited him also to come tomorrow morning. He's going to lead our devotional time at 8:15. One of the first Lost Boys. That name itself came after he had already made his way across Sudan into Ethiopia as a young man. Lazarus, thank you.
Thank you. All right. You guys see me? Short guy, loud voice. All right. I think I will introduce myself today, and then tomorrow we will talk more. What I will say first, I will say thank you very much for you guys to make this often for me to be here with you. I've been with Mid-American Yearly Meeting for like 4 years. My name is Lazarus. I am from Sudan, South Sudan. I came to America in 1998. I married. I have 5 children. I've been a minister, I think, over 20 years before I come to America. I think... More of you know about a background about Sudan. Sudan is an Islamic country. 75% is Muslim, 20% is Christian, and 5% is non-believer. We are a Christian in Sudan. We've been under persecution for 56 years. And I've been a minister in Sudan. The reason why it caused me to be here is displaced me in Sudan to Ethiopia. I've been a minister for like when I'm still young. I don't know about Christianity here. That we, when we came here in America, I see the difference here and there. I would say I am a fifth generation in Christianity in Sudan. And second to that, when I am say I'm fifth generation, that is a different time that you are a Christian and different time that you are a believer. I don't know, you guys know that. If I say I am a fifth generation, it does not mean that. Some people, they say, oh, he is for fifth generation in the family. He is a Christian. He is a believing. Some people say that. Thing like that. But that is the time that you become Christian. Like me, I am from fifth generation, but in that time, I'm not a believer. You become a Christian, and maybe you're not a believer. The question say, when I teach sometimes, I ask, when you become a Christian, I become Christian this year. Okay, and when you become a believer, and people, they look at me, what is the difference? That's the time that you become a Christian, and that is the time that you commit yourself to Jesus. You are be a Christian when we say 25% Christian in South Sudan. Don't think that all 25 are believer. You know? They still need Jesus. They still need Jesus. My first time when I was in Sudan, I am a Christian. I work in the government as a minister in the government. I just go to church. I not care about what is going on in the church. But the time persecution go bad in Sudan, God called me and showed me that you need to commit yourself to me. I need to use you with different purpose. And then I leave my job, I go to church, I commit myself to Jesus. And that persecution is go worse, very worse. You know, our government in Sudan is under Islamic control. Islamic like this and government like this. Everything's under Islamic in my countries. If Islam say no, government will do it, say no. To begin, when I go to church and commit in myself and God call me, I start teaching 10 commandments to peoples. And then I go to Bible schools. And then I'm one of the evangelists at the church. And then the next, they train me. I become one of pastors. That is a big church. We are 9 pastors. And we are like 3 sheep. Time. And we have 6,000 congregation. See what happened? And the government came and killed one of us. He is our senior pastor. He don't like. The church is growing because they are Muslim. And then the church is split away. And then when the church is split away, look, that's what God take me away from that position and try to bring me here. And when church is split away and all the pastors is scared to come together, take it over. And I am the youngest one. And then the people ask me, can you take it? I say, I am the youngest one. We will talk about that tomorrow. You know who say that I am the youngest one? I am the least in my clan. And then I say, I am the youngest one. I cannot take it. And then people go and looking around, come back to me. Can you take it? I say, I don't know. Part of people, they think that I'm scared, like the others are scared, because the government tell us that if you continue to build that church, all of you will die. And then I ask God, I say, okay, tell me exactly, do you want to use me? Then I pray for Sigmund. And that time I am 17. In our culture, it's different from here. When you reach 17 or 15, you are a man enough in my culture. Not like here, you are 15, they call you are a child or something like that. But in our culture, when you are 16, you see this mark, right, in my forehead. You get it with you when you are 14 or 15. And when you get this, you are on your own. And then the answer say, I will take it. Then that's where I start my ministry. Then I put the church together and church come up again. And then the government came again and attacked the church and killed 3 elders, including my uncle. They tell me that you are the one who have an idea because you are a young. The oldest people, there are people who have that idea. They never know that all everything comes from me. And then they kill. And then the next day, they told me that when you continue this, next day when we come, you get killed. I say, okay. You say I get killed. To me, you send me where I supposed to be. You say you kill me, but you send me where I supposed to be. When I die, I go to heaven. That's where I supposed to be. Nothing prevent me to continue. And then the next day they came and then they bombed the church, all the church. And then they miss me where I am. God is protecting me. And then in the evening I talk to my parents. And that time I just process to get married, all study, everything. And to my lovely wife, now she is in Omaha. And then our marriage is take longer, take process. It's not easy, it take like 5 year process. And that time I not finished it yet. And then I talk to my father and I say, you know what? I have an agreement with God. These people in Sudan, they say they will kill me. They try to end what God told me to do. But I'm not. I will go somewhere that I will go and learn and be mature enough and come back to Sudan and pick it over from where I stopped. And then I decide to move out in Sudan. I went to Ethiopia countries in 1983. In 1983, I went, you know, I don't know, the border between Ethiopia and Sudan, there is no transportation. For walk, it takes you 5 months walking. What about me when I crawling? How many do you think I will take? You don't know. It takes 5 months when you walk, your feet, but I crawl with my hand. And it does it. It's hard to get a water. But God is take care. It's taken me 9 months. 9 months to cross that border from Sudan to Ethiopia. And then when I reach Ethiopia, I say, I have agreement with God. I will never give up. And then I start my ministry in Ethiopia. I train the leaders and send them back to Sudan. And then train, send them back. Train, send them back to Ethiopia. And then the government of Sudan try to look where I am. They not find it. They don't know I'm in Ethiopia. And then I train people, send them. And then train others. The during Mengistu regime, during the Ethiopia change, the regime change, the new government went in. And then the new government have a relationship with Sudan. And then they find I am in Ethiopia. And then they try to hand me over to Sudan government. And then the God say, no, it's not work. And that time I work in the church and I have another job with United Nations. I commissioned it for refugees. And that one I have connecting with a friend from America, friend with Canada, friend with Australia. And then both three countries, they come. They say, you know, you are in danger. We will find the way to escape you. We give you some application from America, Canada, or Australia. I fill all both. It takes a long time. And then the American sends lawyers when from here to Ethiopia, they give me interview. And then second, they send the judges. Two judges went to me to Ethiopia. And then the migration. And then they say, okay, we approve you to come to United States. I jumped something. Let me go back a little bit. When I come to Ethiopia, my wife left to Sudan. Because there is no way to tell her, let's go out. And then I left my wife to Sudan. When I come to Ethiopia, I find the way to my wife between Ethiopia and Sudan is not work. And then I find the way between Nairobi and Sudan, and my wife get out from Sudan to Nairobi, Kenya. And then we did the process over there, and then the American came, the lawyers, they came and did the process for her first, and then they bring her here. And the time they came, my wife come to U.S., and then my process is very easy. Take 4 months. Then we came. The time I came, I'm still, when I come to America, I'm still say, I have agreement with God. When I came to Tennessee, I tell my wife, this is agreement. We came to country, food is here, is enough, clean water, everything. We will enjoy it. Maybe we forget everything back home, but we never forget that we have agreement with God to learn more and go back and pick it over where I stop. And then I create a minister. I start my ministry in Tennessee. That's my history. And then about the show, when I start in Tennessee, we have a Sudanese largest community in Omaha. The largest Sudanese community in the U.S. is Omaha, is Nebraska. And then the time they hear that I am in Tennessee, they went and visit me. And majority of them, they are the people I trained, the people in my ministry. They say, you need to come to Omaha. We need to start a ministry here. Then they move me, and then I come to Omaha. When I come to Omaha, I start the ministry in my small apartment, living room, in 2005. I started with children. I just collect the children, teach the program, sing the song, until my living room is full. And then when my living room is full, I ask, okay, God, what do you want me to do? I thank you. You brought these people to me. How do I make it as fun? I don't have a place. And then he tell me there is a building over there. Can you go and visit it? Maybe you find somebody to talk to. It's called Brookside Church. That is E-Free Church. And then I went there. At that time, Randy Littlefield is a church planting director at E-Free Evangelical Free Church of America. And then that is the pastor telling me that, okay, you want to have a minister. Okay, we have a connection with somebody that maybe he will help you. He gave me the number. I called the office, and then he figured up. And then he told me that I never know him, and he don't never see me. He said, okay, we have a conference on Columbus, Nebraska. Do you think you will make it? I say, yeah. And then I went there. And when I go there, it's like what I see today. You know, I went there. When I went there, they received me like somebody who was with them for like 10 years. And I feel like I know them for 10 years. You know? And then when we talk, one pastor say, yeah, I have a building for him. You want to use it? I say, yeah. And then his name is called Dan Moore. And then I start working with Randy Littlefield in E-Free Church. And then in E-Free Church, they asked me, okay, we have a mission in Africa. We don't know how to connect. Do you think you will have us? I say, yeah. That's what I here for, and that's what my vision, to spread the word of God. And then they gave me a ticket. I go to Nairobi, Kenya, and went to Sudan. And then within 3 months, we planned like 27 churches in South Sudan for E-Free Church. And then I tell them I am still on my ministry. And I keep my ministry growing in Omaha until 2011. 2011, Randy changed the position to French Church. And then when Randy, after a year or 2 years, introduced me to French Church, and then I say, let me pray for it. Let me pray for it. We talk about like take me 2 years, and then I meet with Dave Robertson, the Mid American Yearly Meetings. And then they came visit Omaha, and then I say, let me pray for it. Until the God tell me, you need to connect it with these people, because I am independent. I need to share the gospel with other people. And then they make appellation in 2011 as Evangelical Friend Church in Omaha. And that's how I start the church in Omaha. The last connection. I've been looking, if I talk to some leaders, okay. If I am Evangelical Friend Church, there is others Evangelical Friend Church in North America. Because we need to work. We need to have connections. Events. If there is some Africa too, we need to have a connections. And I connect in working together is very important. Like today, some people, they ask me, oh, I don't know, we have a friend church in Omaha. There's a lot of people, they don't know there is a friend church in Omaha. I think there is a friend church in Omaha for a long, long time in Nebraska. And it's not exist. I'd be happy to make a connection to start some churches in different states, like Iowa. And I believe that God knows how to connect his people. That's why we are here today. And when Randy Littlefield reminded me, let's go to Iowa, and I discussed, I supposed to come, what year we met? 2013. I text Ron number, and he gave me the number. He told me, call me. I think I never call you. And then when we met again, then the time I come here and Randy bring me and I meet with you, I remember, oh, that's what Rwanda told me to call. And now God, time is coming. And the time I met with you in Colorado, he gave me the email and telephone number. I called the wrong one and I gave up. And then I was sleeping in the morning, like around the time you call, I think around 11 or something. And I dream. I say, why you not call Ron? And then when I wake up, I find him, you call and leave the message. Are you available for our yearly meeting? I say, yes. I say, now I dream and you call. I will make it open. You know? And I am here. And I'm here. And God have a plan. Our persecution in Sudan is very bad. My living country is very bad. Living country, living people. Persecution. At that time, I feel like I'm not a human. And I mad why God did that. But when I'm right in America, you start the churches, go back to Sudan. I'm so exciting for God to make the persecution going on in South Sudan. Because without persecution, I'm not be with you today. And you not be with me. And rest of you maybe will never see South Sudan. And I will never see. God sent me for purpose as a mission to America. And God sent you from America to South Sudan as a mission to South Sudan. And that's the way that God make it open. And the last one that tomorrow I will talk. I want to give you a little thing, our homework. And when we talk tomorrow, I think all of us have a backyard, right? All of us have a home. You have your backyard, right? In your home. I know you are not your home. You are here. You love your home. But imagine like you are in your backyard. Look. Your backyard, what you find there, and come and tell me tomorrow when we talk. Thanks.
So, I was just thinking this morning, my backyard didn't get mowed this week. So, be thinking about that. 8:15 in the morning, we will be downstairs, room 103, okay? And we'll hear more from the Word of God through Lazarus. Thank you so much for coming. He kept trying to call me this morning, and we weren't connecting, and I thought, oh, no, he's not coming. And then I finally called him, or he called me, he says, hey, I'm here. Where are you? That's why I left this morning and came over this way earlier than the rest of you. Okay, Mary Glenn.
I think we are excited to hear what all God is doing in the world around us. We've heard people getting prepared to go. We've heard opportunities that may be out there for us. The Mission Board has prepared a packet for each of the churches. I know several of you have picked them up. We know that we don't have a lot of time left, but we'd like to just let you know what's in those packets, because we think that it will help you in your churches. So, Rita, do you want to start by telling what all we find, or part of what is in the packets?
Okay, we want to talk about a few of the resources that we have. There is a directory of workers that are associated with Iowa Yearly Meeting. They're listed by where they're serving, starting with the Showalters in Iowa Yearly Meeting and the Biddles and Dulesky's, so on. You can read that. Then there's birthdays of workers and their families. Some of you have asked for that, and it's nice to have that. You can pray for them. You can send them cards, call them. Suggested ways to keep informed. We have newsletters available from different workers, and Friends United Meeting has many resources that Colin has already talked about. There's a sheet there, a flyer from the Martins in Cambodia, and then the newsletter from the Radcliffes, the latest newsletter. We also have service opportunities. Friends United Meeting looking for workers in Ramallah, and Global Ministries Program Assistant for Friends United Meeting. Anyway, you can look through those. And then last year we gave out Operation World to the churches that had put up posters about what they are doing in their ministries. And we didn't hear from very many of you about using that Operation World. Show me your hands, those of you that use Operation World at all. Yep, that's about as many responses as we got. So I just encourage you to check that book out. It's a really wonderful resource. It's Jason Mandrick's Operation World, the Definitive Prayer Guide to Every Nation. And every day there's a nation to pray for and specifics to pray for. And it gives you lots of information about the country, the size of the country, the breakup of the religions in the country, specifics about their economy and politics and answers to prayer that have already been had, and then the challenges to prayer. We also included this world map. It's a world prayer map, and today is the 31st of July, and it has a list of countries to pray for that are in this bottom part of South America. So today it's French Polynesia, Chile, Bolivia, Paraguay, Argentina, Uruguay, and the Falkland Islands. And it gives you specific ways to pray. It says, Father, ask for open hands, open doors, open minds, open hearts, and open heavens. That would take you about 3 minutes to pray for that particular set of countries. But then there's also, for those of you that have an hour to pray, there's a good way to pray more in detail. And it's really for your entire prayer time, because it starts with praising and then just waiting, confessing, and so on. So I just encourage you to look at those. These are free. There is a website on this map where you can order them. Each church will have those. You can order them for your church. And Kathy said she has some extra ones here at the back. So that is that. And then we have Nancy.
In the packet, we wanted to include things for the children because we want to get them excited about missions while they're young. And there is a child's world map in there, and we have all the extras back on the table if you want to pick up more. There's one of each in your packet. There's also information about a workshop that Rita went to, Jesus People Telling Jesus Stories, and just some sites you can go to. It mentions the Action Bible, which looks like a comic book, and she has one up here that you can look at, and I know she has a box of them here if you're interested in getting those. She says it's good to just set out. The kids will look at it and read it.
Adults, too.
Then we included Praying Hands for Missions, where we teach the kids how to pray for missions using their hands. I taught that at church camp this summer to the two youngest camps there, so that's included. And also the thumb ministry, which is a resource to teach kids about teaching praying for other religious groups of people, tribal, Hindu, unreligious, Muslim, and Buddhist. And Rita has some information over there, some of those, and she's printed off the information in that notebook that you can look at. We want to make sure, encourage kids right from the beginning to be praying for missionaries or to become one, to be prepared to be one.
All right. Well, I'm going to give you an update on southern Tanzania. And I heard from Judith just this morning. I, by way of Facebook, messaged her, and she did get back to me, gave us some update, a quick update. I do want to tell you, as a yearly meeting, we have sent close to 15,000 in support of southern Tanzania. Some of that was the Easter money, the offering that you guys gave in your churches, your local meetings. Some of that money was money from the Quaker Men that was given. And as a mission board, we have decided that we took $10,000 from the Vanguard Fund and in support of southern Tanzania. Now, some of you may be saying, that's a lot of money to be throwing over there, right? Well, we are like to think we are good stewards of God's money. So we decided to partner with FUM in the distribution of those funds. To date, I think we've sent about 2,000 so far for the first building of the first building that they're building. And what we are going to do is we are going to allow FUM, with the direction of Kyle, a monthly meeting, to tell us exactly what needs to be done over there. So what's going to happen is going in incremental stages. They will build what they have with the money that we send them. When that money runs out, they will notify FUM, and FUM will release another adjudicated amount, and they will go to a second stage. That way we're not sending them the entire amount and saying, figure it out on your own. Okay? We are in control of that money. FUM is distributing that for us. You can be rest assured of that. Now, let me give you a quick update of the ministry going on in southern Tanzania. Judith Ngoya said that there are three trained pastors, as you know, down there in southern Tanzania. They have now planted, are you ready? 10 churches. Okay? They have also broken into the Malawi region and the Malawi country, and they are continuing to plant churches there. So, they are doing the work of God. They are the hands and feet of Jesus. Now, Judith and the leadership team are keeping on top of what's going on down there. They are, on September 5th, will be meeting with their leadership teams, and they will be going down to southern Tanzania, taking more pictures for us, and getting an update of what's going on down there. We really have our hands down there, our hands and feet, and things are moving quickly. Judith has asked for prayer from our yearly meeting. It is a three-day trip down there. They don't have good transportation, and they need God's grace. Here's what she has asked to pray for. So let's just take a few seconds and let me put these together. As I tell you what she needs prayer for, please just be lifting that up to God and into His light. She needs prayer for the travels for leadership team as they travel to southern Tanzania. They need a strong vehicle to be provided to go down there and to also do ministry with. She asks for prayer for health of their families and the families in southern Tanzania, for the Kayela Church, and for being able to work against the spirit of Satan as he is trying to break through to that meeting. So, in your packets, You have some pictures that were in the Iowa Yearly Meeting Friends that you can take a look of some of the progress that they're doing down there. So continue to pray for them, support them, and just remember that they are doing the work of God, and we are supporting that. So be in touch. If you need information about that, we have it. I'm also going to give you a little bit of guidelines that as a mission board we have put together as far as sending funds either to Tanzania, FUM, or wherever you want to. The mission board of Iowa Yearly Meeting strongly encourages the churches to send all their money to their mission funds through our mission board. It would give us a much clearer picture. We're not trying to say who you need to send it to, how much you need to send. We're not trying to control that. What we're trying to do is to get a clearer picture of what Iowa Yearly Meeting is sending as a body to the mission field. Do you understand? We don't want to control what you're giving. We're not doing that. We'd like to get a picture. We're quite sure that the total mission giving is much larger than what we are reporting because we're not getting all those funds run through us. So here are some guidelines quickly. Please make sure that all checks that you make out are payable to Iowa Yearly Meeting Missions Board, not Dorothy Taylor, who is our treasurer, although I'm sure she would welcome the money. But the money's not for Dorothy, okay? So send it to Iowa Yearly Meeting Missions, and we have that address on the website, right? Okay. And please use the contribution form provided by the yearly meeting. You can find that at the yearly meeting office, or you can get that from someone on the mission board. It is not necessary to write a separate check. Let's say you want to give some money to Ramallah, you want to give some money to Nathan and Brianna. You don't have to write a separate check. You can write one check for the total, and on that contribution form, list who you're giving it to, okay? So there's no need to write five different checks. You can write one. If you don't have a form or you don't know what the project is for, just make a note on your check or a note for Dorothy. If you send funds for a mission project which is not on the form, please include the address to where you want it to be sent. We have the addresses of our missions, but if you want to send it somewhere else, please include that for Dorothy so she can get it. Thank you for your continued support of Iowa Yearly Missions. And this is what we believe as a mission board, one of the most important things God has called us to do. On another note, not related to that, but we as a mission board have put together some guidelines that are in your packet for people who are asking for funds from the Iowa Yearly Meeting Mission Board. The Iowa Yearly Meeting office has been approached by people asking for support and for their ministry, and we're not promoting that ministry. So we decided that we should set up some guidelines. And I'm just going to run through those real quick and then turn this back over to Mary Glenn. Persons requesting financial support from the yearly meeting should be active in their local meetings. I think that's common sense, but we needed to address that, okay? A recommendation from the local meeting for the yearly meeting to support the person seeking to serve in the mission ministry will be required. If you're needing money from Iowa Yearly Meeting, we need to know that your monthly meeting knows what you're doing, okay? The yearly meeting will give priority to requests for financial support to those working with Friends Ministries. We will consider other ministries. However, we are giving priority to the Friends Ministries. Number four says, persons requesting to solicit funding from the yearly meeting churches need to support Iowa Yearly Meeting faith and practice beliefs. They should have some involvement in the yearly meeting so they can be known. And those are the guidelines. They're right in your packets. I urge the churches and the mission boards to open them packets. Don't just put them on the pastor's desk and don't look at them. Open them up, read them, and use those resources. We've worked really hard for that. Thank you.
I hope you will find these packets helpful. One other thing I would like to add about the sending the money to our treasurer, I guess her address isn't on there, but it is on the forms. So the forms that you would send with the check. So I think you can have that address. Or if not, we can get it in the Iowa Friend or get word to you somehow. I would also just like to make one comment, and that is that we feel like another reason for asking you to send your checks through the mission board is that when we send a larger check to FUM, for example, the administrative cost is at a less percentage, and so more of your money actually goes into ministry. And so that's another reason for us to ask that of you. If you have questions about those things, you can see who is on the missions board. I'd like to say that Nancy Stevens will be the new missions board clerk. I'm sure she'll do a great job. In closing, we would like to ask you to stand, and Jan Palmer is going to pray for our workers that we have heard from today.
If any of those who are still here want to come down and gather around Lazarus, anybody still here that reported? Colin. And he has to get to a plane. Martins, can you come and represent your kids? Robert, Pribbles, McDonald's? If you're still here, come and join us, or come gather. Lord, we acknowledge you as our head. You have authority. You have dominion. You are in charge. We recognize that. We acknowledge you, and we submit ourselves to you. We are your kids. We are your family. We are your people. And some of the phrases I've heard today from these reports, we have an agreement with God. All of these people here who have reported to us today, I think they would agree with that. There is an agreement with you. You have called them. You have placed your hand on them. And there will be that question, God, what do you want me to do? We've heard some trepidation today. We've heard some, I don't know what to do. So we want to have that freedom to ask you, what do you want me to do? With the firm faith that you will answer, you will show the way. We have connections with each other because of you. We are family, and because of that, we as a yearly meeting want to stand with these people, our brothers and sisters. We want to offer. We want to commit ourselves to that faithful nurture. And that means we need to get down to work and figure out ways to do that. Thank you for the bond that we have. Thank you for your faithfulness, your plan, your purpose, and the ways that we can be part of that. Thank you in Jesus' name. Amen.